Yeah. مرحبا مرحبا في ميوزك فور هيومن. I'm a دكتور جالس السكران here with your new age cookie. This delicious new age cookie simply begs to be eaten by your spirit. I'm here with my formidable host of hosts, Aurora, vocal specialist. Welcome, Aurora.
Thank you for having me on the show today, Dr. Jalis, and for embracing me with your spiritual cookie.
It is always a pleasure to share the great wonder of my spirit cookie with the world whenever I can. Thank you, Aurora. We also have with us the now late Professor Levine, Professor of Mystic Jewry. Welcome, Professor.
Hello, and it is wonderful to be here from beyond the grave for the first time. And just to explain what that means, the other day, a very close being, a being that is very emotionally close to me, passed away. His name was Ben. He was my pet goldfish. So I've decided to share the experience of death with Ben, with my pet goldfish. So I've entered into a state where my body no longer shows the normal functioning of a living body, but my spirit is still capable of conversing with you. So I join you today from this sort of state of spiritual limbo until I decide to reemerge from that state.
And for those of you who cannot see him, Professor Levine currently is very, very pale and somewhat clammy.
I'd say I look somewhat like a shadow.
Yes, that seems to be accurate. A very pale, wet shadow.
A moist shadow.
And the moistness of this shadow is what really, I think, suggests death to me more than anything else about you, Professor. Because, as usual, your spirit force is lively and forceful, powerful.
It's almost cake-like, one might say.
I prefer to think of it as a bit of a Danish with cherry but and cheese filling.
I can simply imagine you being in a closet somewhere, reclining and casting out that spirit force.
Yes, in fact, my body is currently in a closet in my apartment, sitting in a chair. Lifeless.
But not really lifeless.
Well, as far as the medical community is concerned, it is lifeless for now, until my shadow, my spirit, decides to reincarnate the body and bring its life force back.
And I'd like to mention that those of you at home who wish to undergo the same sort of ethereal travel that our Professor Levine is going should probably not consider it. It is only to be done by specialists.
Precisely. One whose spirit cookie has been enlarged through a great deal of previous meditation, practice, training,
yes,
etc.
In the former institute in which I used to teach, we had a certification program for this sort of spiritual technique. So only those who are certified and licensed by the state of Massachusetts may legally undergo this sort of spirit death. And of course, it's something temporary for me. As soon as my period of mourning for Ben, my goldfish, is over, I will re-inhabit my body.
And the name Ben also, is that part of the Jewish tradition, the name?
Well, I used to have 12 goldfish, each corresponding to one of the children of Jacob. And the youngest and the final survivor over the past few decades was Ben, and he passed away, and now my goldfish are no more, and it's been very difficult for me.
Have there been children?
No, I trained my goldfish to live a life of celibacy. So in fact, there were female goldfish in the bowl as well, but they practiced a sort of monk-like discipline, and they abstained from those sort of physical pleasures.
And sort of abstinence is really very difficult to achieve in other children. How is it that you managed to achieve this with the goldfish?
Well, I find that goldfish are surprisingly docile and trainable creatures. One can train them to perform many tricks and to change their behavior. I once trained a school of goldfish to behave like sharks, where they would attempt to attack prey, attack other sharks, in fact. They believed they were sharks. It was sort of a form of goldfish hypnosis.
That's fascinating. And perhaps together in a school they can attain the power of a shark.
Yes, schools of fish are really fascinating assemblages of creatures, and it's amazing how they can act as one in a way that human beings, I think, are really incapable of doing. Really something to admire about the ants and the goldfish of the animal kingdom.
Well, exactly, and this is an attitude that must be cultured and that must be obtained when doing certain activities such as a choir, for example, if one attempts to stand out the way that we tend to do in society, then the whole system collapses. The harmony is broken.
Now, this music is very interesting. This lone female voice, it really reminds me of my days meditating and studying mysticism in the Himalayas. I would often sit on the craggy rocks and have these voices permeating my head.
Yeah, I definitely feel permeated, and those of our listeners who feel similarly permeated may like to call in and to join our circle. The number to do so is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Shalom. I wanted to say I'm so sorry about Ben. And I'm sorry that he's passed.
Yes, well, the time of all goldfishes must come at some point or another, and they must move on to bigger and better worlds than the current fishbowl.
And I'm sorry about your moistness. But I wanted to let you know that I watched the movie, or the DVD, in the realm of the unreal, and it was very interesting.
Yes, the story of, what is his name, Henry Darger, is it?
Yeah, Darger. Yeah, the artful Darger. Ha ha. I thought of a lot of different things. He did read Dickens, which I thought was interesting. He brought to mind a lot of things, even Michael Jackson for some reason.
Well, yeah, the connection with the young boy is probably...
Well, they were girls, but I don't think he knew that girls looked different than boys.
Right, so. The sort of childlike innocence.
Yes, I thought it was very interesting. And 15,000 pages of a novel is quite an undertaking. And 300 paintings, some of them 10 feet long, just amazing.
So were you inspired in any way to create art in your own life?
Well, I do. But the thing that was most interesting was that I felt he was the sum, the expression of all his terrible experiences. It was so simple. It was so...
And in case
obvious.
Any of our listeners aren't aware of what we're talking about here, we're referring to Henry Darger, who was born in the late 1800s and raised in an orphanage and lived his life as a janitor, and yet secretly, in his hermit-like existence, was writing many, many thousands of pages of fantastical fiction and paintings and drawings, and none of this was discovered until after his death.
But these, as many other evidences that are left by other historical figures, I think, you know, in my mind, they point very clearly to a well-developed spirit cookie that is grown under very little supervision. It's, in my mind, Darger, who was his teacher? You know, how did he begin to develop spiritually? Only the universe.
Well, a true student of nature.
A natural student.
I'd like to take this back to Michael Jackson, who was mentioned earlier, and I'm not sure of the connection, but it's interesting when you discuss who the teacher was. Michael Jackson had such great natural talent, especially as a boy. But you notice as he began to lose his connection with nature and with the world around him, so did his natural spiritual cookie fade.
It's really a bit of a tragedy, you might say.
I even thought of the Beatles, the Rooney's, and all the way the pictures were shown. They made them move, which was kind of interesting. And it reminded me of this war between the good and bad, you know, the Rooney's. Anyway, there were a lot of interesting things. So thank you for turning me on to that. I enjoyed it very much. And I'm sorry if I disturbed your train of thought.
Oh no, we welcome spontaneous combustions of all kind.
Precisely. Well, I think there is no real train. We are simply enjoying the moment as it stands.
We are less of a train and more of a bumper car,
or
we might say.
Balloon.
I wanted to ask Aurora, has she ever heard of Cicely Berry, a speech, a voice teacher?
Of what berries? I'm sorry.
Cicely Berry.
Cicely Berry. And what do you use that for?
She's a teacher of voice. You might be interested in her.
I see. And not a fruit of any kind.
No, not a fruit.
Another practitioner.
A person. An English woman. Anyway, because your voice is so beautiful and so...
Well, thank you so much. I'll
definitely listen to.
I'll definitely look into her.
Let's bring a second voice in with us. If you'd like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I love listening, and I'm glad to be here again. I was wondering if any of you have ever left your spirit cookie out in the open air or separated it and dunked it into another substance.
Now, I very much like this train of thought because it is a natural experience that one wishes to take on when one is young. Mm-hmm. But at some point in your life, you begin to fear that the spirit cookie, which you have been growing and developing for many years, would be damaged if you let the world, interact with it too intimately. However, at a further point of development, and I'm speaking now as one who has been developing on the earth for many, many years, you Yes. realize that also to take the cookie and to leave it in the wrapper is to starve not only the world of your spirit cookie, but to starve your spirit of the world's cookie.
Now, I find this concept, the spirit cookie wrapper, particularly disturbing. I wonder, you know, the transmission of certain spiritual forces occurs not only through one's moment in time with their cookie, but you know, through particular barriers of sorts, like don't happen to generate enough momentum, I guess, to
penetrate one cookie barrier.
I would think so.
Well, I'm not sure that this is the case. I could see that it is a matter of momentum, but I think also it is a matter of determination and local sharpness.
And definitely pressure, yes, local sharpness.
Well, one of the most beautiful aspects of the spirit cookie wrapper is the fact that one can take the wrapper and encase someone else's spirit cookie along with one's own in the same wrapper, and join the spirit cookies into a spirit cookie sandwich.
No, I've never heard of such a thing. That's incredible, actually.
With a creamy filling.
It's a spirit cookie twin, actually. Because if you consider briefly, all things in life come in the wrappers at some point. You have the banana with the peel, and even the child is in a sack in the womb of its mother.
The amnion and the chorion.
Precisely. Or you could, if you are sufficiently removed from humanity, regard every mother as a wrapper and every child as a cookie. And so it is a natural thing that the spirit cookie, which would contain mind object and other emotions, would then also come in a wrapper.
My mind runs as I drive down this I-93 South Highway. I'm passing by the General Foods factory, and I wonder, is there an analog to a sort of processed spiritual cookie factory?
You cannot process the spiritual cookie if you yourself do not want to become a craft single human.
There is something very negative about process. Am I wrong? It seems to me that there is a preference for a cookie that takes personal attention. I'm not sure if there is an analog. Perhaps the school system would represent the cookie factory.
Yeah, except I feel that my cream filling has been basically sapped dry. I don't know where it went, but I don't think that's something one can reobtain.
Now, caller, I think that perhaps what may be happening is that in one's youth, one's cookie, one's spirit cookie is small, so to fill it with cream is an easy task. But as you grow, the cookie also grows, and so that same cream may no longer be filling.
So it's the cookie that has grown, but the filling has sort of
precisely
retained.
Precisely.
It's only thinned out.
It's atrophied. It hasn't grown at the same rate as the cookie, and
it's a stretched cookie.
Well, I'm frustrated at my cream, then.
Well, one has to continually recreate and rebuild and redevelop the cream.
And to draw your cream from those around you and from the spirit world around
you.
Yeah,
I wonder if our caller, have you noticed a weakening in your social relations?
Actually, just recently, I've noticed an immense strengthening, ironically. Seems as though that's the way life goes, and one loses their cream, and then next thing you know, everybody, you know, wants a cookie to share the cream with.
There are some people, I believe, who have very small cookies and are overflowing with cream. And so it is natural that this balance would be restored by nature. But to some extent, it is a matter of your own preference. Some cream must come from others, but I think it is speaking as a person who possesses an extremely large spirit cookie. I prefer to have a substantial amount of the cream be my own.
Well,
I must admit to preferring my spiritual cookie to be somewhat dry.
I go through phases myself. I tend to, I don't know, I like to mix it up. Sometimes in the, when I was a little kid, we'd get the tin of, it was a blue tin, it was cylindrical shaped, and there were some of my favorite cookies in there that had a rock sugar sprinkled on top. So at times I like a dry cookie or a cream cookie or even rock sugar sprinkled all over my cookie.
And is our first caller still with us? Caller one.
Carol, is it?
I think we may have lost her.
We may have lost her, yeah. Well,
so in any case, any other person that would like to call, we have one line open. And please share with us the moistness or dryness of your spirit cookie. And we will share yours with ours. The number is 617-253-8810.
And of course, in general, beyond the spirit cookie itself, in life itself, many of our motivations can come from within and can come from without. So some of us are more strongly motivated and valued by pressures from within, and others from pressures from without.
So, shall we bring another voice in with us to share that pressure from without?
Let's do it.
Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Yes, hello.
Welcome to the air, caller.
Yes, I don't have too much time here, but I just wanted to ask. I started listening probably late into the mission. I'm not sure if that's the right word. Émission. I'm from France. What's the word? Episode. I came in a bit late into the episode, but I'm wondering if someone could give me an overview of the spirit cookie concept.
Well, I think, caller, thank you for joining us from France. The concept is actually quite simple. The idea of the spirit cookie is that it grows as you grow, and it is filled with the spirit cream or not, and therefore stretched, or it is full and moist and flexible and supple and healthy. And I think the other point that was made was that a spirit cookie may be left in the wrapper or may be exposed to the world so that the spirit and the world may both take their fill of each other and both grow.
It is that thing within you that you can choose to nurture, to share with others, to grow within yourself.
So I know that in the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical writings, there's a conception of something called a divine spark, which is like the innate cosmological principle. Is this something comparable?
Well, of course, and you know, all these things are really metaphors, and yes, I think we can view the spark and the cookie as one and the same. In fact, within the Jewish religion, there was an ancient practice of the loaves of bread that would be placed on the loaf of bread platter in the tabernacle every day. And these loaves of bread were a representation of the divine spark. If you want, that you could view them as cookies. And of course, as in the Kabbalah, we say that the divine spark exists in everything in the world but is hidden behind the husks of impurity. So too, the spirit cookie can be hidden behind many layers of wrappers within us, and part of our spiritual task in life is to uncover these wrappers, unwrap the cookie, and to expose it.
Indeed, and I appreciate the reminder that one may embed one's cookie under a depth of many layers. I met a man, I recall, many, many years ago, who wished to become my student, but after I meditated once with him, I realized that his spirit cookie was embedded in an onion-like structure and was so small it may have been a raisin.
Well, and it may be the case that one of the reason we have these layers is so that those with rotten cookies can keep the rottenness of their cookie from spreading to others. And in fact, if we didn't have these barriers, I think the world would be a very difficult place to live in if everyone exposed the true nature of their cookie to one and all.
If I may, I just realized something important. Cookies, they all consist of very simple ingredients, right? I mean, they're all essentially just flour, sugar, and butter.
Or to the extreme atomist, simply carbon and hydrogen atoms.
Hydrogen, yeah.
Oxygen,
maybe.
Nitrogen, perhaps some phosphor.
Definitely some manganese, if you're in Boston.
Ideally.
I just wonder what the essential, atomic components of the spirit cookie really are, as it translates to one's energy and divine purpose.
Now, would this translate to the Aristotelian conception of the five elements being the foundation of the cosmos? Would there be five ingredients that would constitute the cookie?
Or perhaps even, yes, or Plato's ideal forms. of cookies.
There are many theories about this, scholars, and one must remember that energy and mass, they are one and the same. And perhaps the spirit cookie takes on energy forms rather than mass forms. So it cannot merely be constituted from matter, but
so
from types
of...
I mean, in my mind, there are some basic elements that permit the cookie to be both moist and yet not damp, and the cookie to be filled with cream but not with milk. And it is a matter of a balance of certain attitudes, but, you know, there is a great spectrum of mixtures which will yield, I think, perfectly palatable cookies.
Well, one of the interesting things about the cookie itself in general, the physical cookie, is that one of the dimensions along which cookies can differ from one another is their texture. They can have a very homogeneous texture if the ingredients have been ground up very well, or they can have a bit of a more chunky and dry texture. Mm. And I think so too with the spirit cookie. One can have a sort of more simple form in their soul. There are simple beings whose spirit cookies are homogeneous and don't have too many layers and secrets. And there are those who are more complex, and the spirit cookie contains chunks of raisins and chocolate chips and oatmeal and so on.
Subtle
flavors. What about liquor?
Well, before we answer that, let's open it up again for callers. The number is 617-253-8810 if you would like to join and mix our spirit cookie with yours. Caller, marhaban.
Hello. Listening to your previous line of inquiry about the spirit cookie, I have to wonder that as good syncretists, I wonder if you could incorporate some of the theological teachings of the evangelical fanatic Jack Chick, who in one of his scandalously anti-Catholic little comic books refers to the Eucharist as the death cookie, and claims that when celebrants eat it, demons come out of it and into them.
So it's a strictly anti-Catholic view, but referring to the wafer as a cookie.
Yes.
As a death cookie. No, I'm not familiar with this work.
Jack Chick is responsible for these tiny comic books that, with relatively crude art and an amazingly direct and crude fundamentalist message. Mm. You know, you find them in bus stations and restrooms and the like.
I see.
Well, caller, I must admit that anyone can use the spirit cookie and to taint it in an effort to expose propaganda, to exploit the idea of the spirit cookie in this fashion. But we are not saying that this has anything to do with the Catholic wafers.
In my mind, the idea, one essential element, as one, in order to make a cookie that is palatable, must include sugar in some quantity in the cookie, or some form of sweetness. And I think the idea that one person should be closed or strictly simply attack a whole system of belief like that is adding a load of bitterness into a cookie.
Yes, yes, and of course one always knows that a spoonful of medicine makes your sugar go down, but I think that Mr. Chick is, well, he's definitely on something, but he might also be onto something that he may misidentify the death cookie, but is there an equivalent death cookie for the spirit cookie?
I mean, I have certainly met people whom, as I mentioned earlier, a student that had a very heavily buried raisin cookie, but I've also met people that had a very bitter spiritual aura about them, well, that they were...
Yeah, if I could, I do believe that there is some analogy here, because certain gurus have been known to be capable of transforming their physical being into the form of the spirit cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I believe, has a strong analogy to the Catholic belief of transubstantiation, where the body of Christ becomes the cookie itself.
But are the gurus, once they have transformed themselves into cookies, able to eat themselves?
They are no longer able to do anything. They are permanently in the form of a spirit cookie which may be consumed by others.
So the idea there is that I have solidified myself and petrified my current spiritual expression in a form which may be consumed but no longer changed.
Well, I think my way of viewing it is the fact that their spiritual world has become so powerful that their physical manifestation of their personhood becomes a direct representation of their deep spiritual cookie being. And as a result, their body takes on the form of this cookie. And I think that's part of the theology of transubstantiation, is that Christ becomes the cookie, his body takes on the form of the cookie.
Well, going on to the question about whether or not there are substances or factors which may bring death to one's spirit cookie, there are so many things that can sort of diminish your spirit cookie, to crumble it, or to reduce its cream, to dry it out.
Oh, what might be these factors be?
Well, it depends on the person in question, but there are so many factors, such as we mentioned before, the mass factory spirit cookie of schooling.
So the idea is,
What can we use to preserve ourselves? Is there a calcium propionate of the soul?
Well, you must always keep in touch with yourself to really understand your spirit cookie and embrace it.
I find personally that a bit of a jaunty walk, so walking with a bit of a jaunty air and a feeling of liveliness, swinging the arms, keeping the chin high.
Gold-headed cane.
Outward expressions of confidence.
Of joy and being part of the world. These kinds of movements can keep the spirit cookie fresh and moist.
Mm. And ironically, even sharing your spirit cookie can
increase its girth.
It.
Yes, and I think there are those who spiritually are like flames, where they can give other people fire without diminishing their own fire, and in fact even grow their own fire
while burning in others. I mean, in my mind, one of the most important things in keeping the health of one's spirit cookie is to nurture oneself by forgiving oneself and reflecting on one's actions. I think that it is easy to become dehumanized.
So forgiving oneself.
Especially if you've become a cookie.
Precisely. I mean, this is ultimate, but you know, one may kill the person, but the spirit cookie will survive.
And I should say that no matter how moldy one's spirit cookie has become in life, there is always the chance for rebirth and regeneration. Tomorrow can always be another day.
I think I may have heard the click of death from one of our callers. Are our callers still with us?
I'm here. I was actually going to wonder if plastic cookies have the same, you know, outward appearance and maybe relative consistency as most spirit cookies, but ultimately they're just plastic. I wonder if they serve a purpose or if they function in the same way. Is it better to have a plastic spirit cookie than, you know, a crumbling, moldy one?
Well, I believe what you're referring to is a robot.
Mm.
A manufactured spirit cookie. But we cannot have within ourselves an inorganic plastic cookie, because we are ourselves not plastic. We must be flexible. It is our nature.
Mm. But then, earlier you said matter and energy are one and the same. Isn't plastic just a form of energy, or perhaps it's not, perhaps it's like the anti-energy?
It is not a question of the form of energy. It is a question of the flexibility of the organic ability for one's soul cookie to be molded.
In my mind, caller, really, it comes down to two points. First of all, the fact that the plastic cookie is rigid and the plastic cookie is unchangeable.
And it tastes quite nasty.
Mm. But the other point is that if you treat a person as though they are a mechanical object, I think that gradually their spirit cookie would become plasticized. They would gradually become less organic and less human.
Exactly. And in the limit, you are left with an automaton.
Automaton, precisely.
Well, I wonder if the caller has any experience interacting with other cookies in his own life, other people's cookies. Has he had a good experience with others or not?
Many cookies. It differs region to region. I don't know. I mean, it's a really difficult question because by the time that you've realized one cookie, you look around and you see that, my God, there's a vast array of cookies everywhere. And it's bewildering. Sometimes it makes me feel insignificant, and other times it makes me feel like, you know, I should probably adapt and take on as many cookies as possible.
Well, this reminds me of one of my favorite books, Who Needs Donuts? It's a very famous novel. And in the story of this novel is that this young boy runs away from home to move to the city to find donuts. He meets Mr. Biggs, who is a professional donut collector. And they go off together finding donuts and collecting them in a very large warehouse. Finally, one day, Mr. Biggs meets a pretzel vendor named Annie, and they fall immediately in love. And then go off together, and he leaves all his donuts to the boy. The boy now has all the donuts to himself, yet somehow they don't taste good anymore. And he no longer has the taste for these donuts. Well, one day, he's walking along the street, and he notices an old, poor lady who lives in the basement of a coffee factory. And he notices that the coffee has started leaking from the pipes and she's drowning in the coffee. And so he uses all his thousands of donuts to sop up the coffee and to save her life. And that makes him realize that donuts are not what's important. It's the people who have the donuts and who we share the donuts with. And I think the same can be said about the spirit cookie.
I feel as though my cream has been fully restored.
That's wonderful to hear. And if any other caller wants to talk about their own experience with cookies or donuts or their spirit or their relations with others, our number is 617-253-8810.
And it certainly is wonderful to, you know, spread one's cream and also to have some you know, to taste others' cream. It's a good interaction. And in my mind, it's what makes the whole process worthwhile. And I've had many students whom I've had this interaction with, and you know, people have told me, Dr. Jalis, you know, you are a man of distinction. Why have you not had more children? And my answer is, I've had many, many children, and I'm the child of many, many people, and it is really this interaction that is one that I find the most valuable.
And that's so remarkable to have that restorative, flavor-inducing interaction that with every touch with another cookie you may bring to yourself tastes of cinnamon or nutmeg.
I have read recently that cinnamon is actually poisonous.
As is peanut butter, correct?
I haven't heard that one, but
it is to some people. But all things may be poisonous if you view them in the wrong way.
One can partake of far too many cookies simultaneously.
Indeed, it is possible to overindulge in the cookie. And it is really overindulging in these plastic cookies that is something I fear. I feel like when I interact with a person who is robotic, who is plastic, to whom I can offer no analogy or speak of a greater existence beyond what is before his eyes, I feel that afterwards I have to spend a significant amount of time cleansing my spirit and restoring my faith in myself. And that is a poisonous interaction. I think similarly, if we, you know, I know a lot of people are afraid of consuming too much sugar or fat, but I feel like it is really these poisons that should be feared.
Yes, it is remarkable. It is remarkable how the smallest encounter with someone with negative energy in the day can really alter one's mood for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. What do you do if it's a predictable occurrence? For instance, if daily you know, without control of your own devices, encounter domineering spiritual cookie with very sticky cream.
I think the important thing is to be able to control one's thoughts to some degree, to control focus. One can choose what to focus on, and one can learn how to focus on the object of one's choice. So, for example, if one feels a negative influence from a domineering cookie, one can then break through that cycle of thoughts that's occurring in one's mind and say, no, I will focus right now on something which makes me feel better, something spiritually uplifting and positive.
Well, and that takes the form of the cookie wrapper. You can protect your cookie.
Spiritual barrier method, if you will.
And I'm again not convinced that either course of action is appropriate. I think it's important. Perhaps the analogy that is suited here is to have a zipper on one's spirit cookie wrapper so that one may interact properly with the world when the world is in the right way, when it's natural and appropriate, and otherwise to have one's cookie be enclosed and safe.
And that brings us back to what Dr. Jalas was mentioning earlier, how in the youthful stages, one is constantly dunking one's cookie in various fluids and leaving it exposed to the world. And then one becomes more protective of their cookie as they age. And then towards the end again, more open as they realize that the sanctity of their cookie is worth nothing if it is not always accessible. Or often.
Do you think cookies converge to the same, ultimately the same, I guess, aggregate of spiritual energy? For instance, it's more often than not you see many old, crusty, crumbling cookies aggregated almost.
I definitely believe that when our souls are collected in the sky, that they go to a great mixing bowl of cookies and cream and become a soothing original mix, a laughing, happy mixture of so many cookies, a batter, so to speak.
So is that, death is always something that's obsessed humanity, and there's the fear of death, the fear of losing the sense of individuality, but in other religions, there's the embrace of nirvana, of achieving that state where the ego ceases to exist and one melds with the entire universe and achieves a kind of blissful interconnectedness. And I myself have wavered back and forth. Some days I fear death and seek to preserve my individual personhood. But other days I feel that the universe is a beautiful place to belong to, and it'd be nice to just sort of melt away into the atmosphere.
Well, in your constant title as the late Professor Levine, how do you feel yourself in this present hour?
Well, although my body is in a state of death at the moment, sitting in my closet on a chair, my spirit still retains its individuality. I have not achieved a state of blissful melting with the universe, so I still have my ego and have my spirit. So
I've not become homogenized.
I have not become one with the universe.
Perhaps Ben's spirit lives on in a box of delicious cheesy goldfish.
That's a beautiful thought, and perhaps one of those cheesy goldfish will nourish someone who's doing an act of loving kindness.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a box of goldfish shall nourish me later tonight.
It may indeed be the case. In my mind, I realize when we have these discussions how important it is that our logical reasoning mind be always second to our subjective organic reality, which is emotional and subconscious, because otherwise it is simply too easy to become ungrounded, to begin to believe that the world is ruled by malicious gods and that reality itself may not be a truth. Whereas I think this sort of subjective law is enforced to some extent by one's subconscious. So when we have these discussions, I see how critical that is, because we speak, again, Professor Levine here speaks of losing himself in the universe. Well, there is an important part of his brain that would prevent that from happening permanently.
The hippocampus.
Perhaps.
Or the frontal cortex. The frontal lobe.
I think it is the frontal lobe which would... I mean, it is ironic, and I realize a departure from the current belief about the brain, but I actually think it is what would... what is at risk of losing itself. I think it's really perhaps even the amygdala that really keeps you grounded, because ultimately you may think to yourself, I am lost, I am part of the universe, but some part of your brain will say, breathe and eat and drink and maintain your existence and be concerned for continuing to live.
It is certainly true that one's amygdala, when severed, does end one's physical life.
It's fascinating that something like as beautiful as a dolphin with almost as many frontal lobe folds as a human brain has to voluntarily breathe.
But do we not all voluntarily breathe?
No, in fact, human beings involuntarily breathe.
No, I mean, spiritually we must voluntarily breathe.
Well, and I'm sure, Aurora, you've had many interactions with patients or students whom you have had to teach to breathe and to control one's breathing.
Exactly, and so much of this involuntary breathing can actually be much more perfect than one's voluntary breathing. You notice that when you are asleep and you awake upon sleeping, that you are not shaking your shoulders, and that you feel the deep breaths going within you and leaving your body after nourishing your blood. And the trick is to teach those to breathe voluntarily.
I feel a very mellow energy on the program tonight. I think we're all very relaxed and maybe a bit tired. Of course, if any caller wants to infuse our show with a little more energy for the remaining 5 minutes or so, they are welcome to do so.
Indeed, we do have a line available if you'd like to call in. It's 617-253-8810. And it is a rumor, I'm not sure if it's the case, but the instruments seem to suggest that the world outside is celebrating the day with a beautiful display of sunlight.
Yes, and this weekend in particular is supposed to be very beautiful. I know last week on the show, I think our phone lines were down, and we were beseeching people to call in and not receiving any calls to our knowledge, but in fact, people were trying to call us, so we do apologize for that.
As we discovered later, quite to our amusement, I would say. But this idea of the spirit cookie is really making me a little bit remembering my own physical form and the desire to again...
to fill your physical vessel.
Yeah, quite literally. Let's take that final call. Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the air.
Thank you. Thank you. It is gracious of you to host me and to host the rest of us, we seekers of spiritual truth.
Well, it is only an honor and a pleasure to seek with you, caller.
I had the misfortune to hear only a partial amount of your most excellent program today because I had to deal with such issues as getting running water in my home, in my pointlessly luxurious home that is so much better than what many people in the third world have. But my question is, and perhaps you have dealt with it already, but I was distracted. If there is a spirit cookie, is there a spirit sweet potato? Or is there a spirit banana? Or spirit nectarine?
Well, caller, I believe you missed the point of the analogy.
I may have. What was the point?
Well, in my mind, I think actually the caller has struck upon a very important observation, which is that which I may call a cookie, another may call a banana, because...
Or a papaya.
The arrangement is analogous. To a topologist, it is a wrapper containing a nutritious object, which may be constructed of, again, the atomist would say, the same components.
And as you may tell from the personality and smell of some, they have a spiritual garlic.
Again, a wrapper, but not containing anything sweet, simply something which is
nourishing
in another way. I can see that. I draw that.
Now, caller, what do you see within yourself? What form does your spirit nourishment take?
Oh, that is too deep a question for me to fathom. But I wondered, if I were to bake cookies, would my spirit be in those cookies? And would those who ate the cookies eat my spirit?
If you poured yourself truly into the baking of these cookies and meditated upon stirring the ingredients and spooning them onto your dishes, then truly a piece of yourself will melt into it, as a piece of yourself melts into everything that you do with great attention.
I agree with Aurora here. I think that alternatively, if you think poisonous thoughts, that it is inevitable that those who consume the cookie would have some sort of indigestion.
Well, suppose, you know, if we are passing on ourselves through the cookies that we bake, or is that like a form of reproduction, human reproduction?
I think every discourse or intercourse we have with other beings which possess spirit cookies is a form of reproduction. We are reproducing some part of ourselves in others, as well as receiving some part of others in ourselves.
But you must also take the long view. For we are to melt into the same whole batter, then we are not reproducing, but merely touching parts of ourselves.
I think the good things spread and the nasty things disappear. But unfortunately, callers, we are out of time.
Thank you for your gracious program.
Thank you for your gracious call, caller.
Thanks for having me as well.
Thank you, caller. Hosts, once again, nature has fully consumed our 1 hour long spirit cookie. Thank you for being with us, Aurora.
Namaste.
And Professor Levine.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM with Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age talk radio with an emphasis on your spirit cookie. Stay tuned next for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'asalama. Thank you.
for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
For ABW.